This episode of the Justin Robert Young podcast. Fuck me in the butt. This episode of... Okay, here we go. Restart. And take two. This episode of the Justin Robert Young podcast is brought to you by 259 people who, if they were tested in a Hindu celebration of endurance, would come out clean on the other side. Pure of heart, pure of mind, pure of spirit. I don't know if Hindus do endurance tests. But if they do, you know, come at us, bro. Patreon.com/jury. Wink! On a crap plate. You ever have a crap on a crap plate? Well, good goddamn if you ain't gonna get one right now. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Justin Robert Young. This is the Jury Podcast. I'm glad we got the formalities out of the way because this, my friends, is going to get hot and heavy. This one is gonna get icky. It's going to get sticky. It is going to require a wet nap at the end of it. Now, you might think, oh, this is because it's going to get sexy, and it's going to get a little sexy. I'm going to give you a foolproof, absolutely ironclad way to demonstrate to a sexual partner that you are ready to go. It's going to enhance your sex life tenfold. That's a Justin Robert Gerbils guarantee. I also have some serious topics, but mostly what we're going to do is discuss how bad you suck. Now, I don't necessarily mean all of you. I mean some of you. And by some of you, I mean that you have been emailing me for the past 2 weeks with missed signal stories. Now, I don't know if you guys have picked up on this, but I do a lot of these like fishing for topic kind of things. Like I say, like, oh, I'm doing something. I want to talk about something. I share a little something about my life. I throw it out to you guys to see whether or not you guys have stories that would fit within that framework. And 9 times out of 10, I get good response, decent response. 1 email, 2 email, 3 emails. But what I got when I told a story about how in high school I had a girl writing me demon-centric goth erotic fiction, and I did not pick up on that was a signal that she was on some level romantic or sexually interested in me. The reaction is cascading. It's a rich vein. It is amazing. It is a gusher. If it were crude oil, I would be a millionaire. I would be a Beverly Hillbilly. So we're going to read pretty much all of them. There were only a few of them that were like, I don't know, I talked to a girl and she said she liked me and then I didn't follow up. And then there were some that were like, I don't know, I was banging this chick and next thing you know, her friend's like, hey, I'd like to bang you, but I kept banging my girlfriend. Anyway, high five to me. I sound great. If I were Stone Cold Steve Austin, that's what I would say to that. Because we're not about making yourself feel good, no. We're about embarrassing ourselves for the enjoyment of everybody else listening to this podcast. That's the Justin Robert Young way. So let's go ahead and tell that secret. How can you objectively demonstrate to somebody that you love that you're ready to fuck? Huh? Yeah, we've all been there. Maybe things are getting a little lackluster in the bedroom. Maybe you've been with them for a while. You want to show that this is not just any other time. You know? You do not take them for granted. You do not think that they are just a piece of meat. No. What throbs through you is the coursing power. The erotic miles per hour. The horsepower that will charge an absolutely mind-blowing sexual dynamo. That's it. That's you getting charged up for a real hot fuck sesh. I'll let you know, okay? The next time you're with your lady, go ahead. And when you are disrobing each other, which, as I understand by most customs, normally happens before sex, take their clothes, throw them as far as you can across the room. Like, I'm talking about wind up. Whew. Out a doorway, down the hall. They're going to be like, what the fuck did you just do? Shh. Let the emotion take you. Next thing you know, you took off the shirt, you threw it. Take off their pants. Throw that shit even harder. It's got a little bit more weight to it. You can make it down the hallway. Whew. What the fuck? Hey. Just let the passion move you. Next thing you know, underwear. Oh, shit. It's going down. Sidearm that motherfucker down the goddamn hallway. See if you can hang it on the key rack. Next thing you know, oh, wait. I get what you're doing. You're demonstrating that you have a passion for me that is animalistic. We're not just going to gently fold your clothes like this is the motherfucking Gap and put it down on the bureau. Uh-uh. We're going to show that this shit is for real. This love is deep, and your clothes are getting thrown as far as possible. Now, I know what you're saying. That might be a little unorthodox, Jerry. I don't know if I can handle it. Well, imagine the benefits that will happen the next time you have sex. Because you're about to get things going. You take off the shirt. They're remembering where you threw that shit last time. Uh-oh, it's further now. Oh my word, that means that the fucking I just got last time pales in comparison than the fucking that's about to happen right now. You are banging a gong in preparation to get it on. This is a fucking neon sign that says, welcome to Fucksville, bro or lady. Population you. That's a little tip. Throw the clothes as hard as you can. Because listen, we've been watching movies our entire lives. Where all of a sudden it's like, oh, we just got back from, you know, washing cars. Like, oh, wait, we're starting to get into it. Mm-hmm. Fucking slow fade. Fades back up. Where are the fucking clothes? Huh? They're not just fucking hung up as if it was a 1 minute Martinizing. Nope. They're all over the place, hung up on all different facets of the room. Furniture, strewn with it. This is where you see wild sex has happened. It, in the visual language of film, it tells the story with one frame. It's all for you, my friends. You can learn these lessons. That and so much more. I'm going to talk about privilege, and then we're going to talk about everybody's super embarrassing fucking stories. But we got a little tribute as our music throughout the day today. Leonard Nimoy is no longer with us. He has shuffled loose this mortal coil. There's a million reasons why he's important, but I think as a bellwether, nobody has experienced more what it means to be a geek icon in the geek ascendancy. That dude started in the 70s, or not didn't start, but like in the 70s, wrote a book called I Am Not Spock because he was more than just an actor. And what happened in the intervening decades was he became an icon, he became a king, he became somebody that had a much broader platform than I think he ever dreamt he would have because of his work. He deserves every ounce of tribute. He deserves every ounce of love. And I am just thrilled that at least he got to live to see how much his work was enjoyed and truly changed the world. This is one of my favorite things that Leonard Nimoy ever did. We're going to play it throughout the breaks. We'll be right back on The Jury Show.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of the Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole and everybody knows him. Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, Tommy, Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, bravest little hobbit of them all.
So I was listening to sports talk radio, and, you know, specifically the Dan Le Batard show, I very much enjoy that. It's a little bit different than the normal caller go ahead. You know, I think they should take a quarterback kind of sports talk. I very much enjoy it. I think they do a great job. Big shout out to everybody there. But there very often is this recurring conversation in sports about privilege and about people not understanding that the faults of people who are gifted are the same as our own faults. Specifically, there's a story out here about Larry Sanders, not Larry Sanders as in Gary Shandling's alter ego in the iconic HBO comedy, but rather the Larry Sanders who used to be a center for the Milwaukee Bucks. He was a very promising young player. He was also extraordinarily depressed and very anxious. He wound up getting suspended a couple times for failing drug tests for weed. And he basically came out, left the league, got bought out of his contract, and wrote this, or did a video explaining why he left. Said, listen, I was just really depressed and anxious, and all of a sudden everybody around me went from my friend and my family to looking at me like an ATM. It was really hard to deal with, and so I self-medicated. That wound up getting me in trouble, and my love for basketball kind of faded. Now, I think there's a lot of legitimate kind of conversations you can have about Larry Sanders, even on the critical end, that, you know, he kind of finds out that he's really not into this basketball thing after he signs a multi-million dollar contract, which in the whole gigantic scheme of things might be the best way to handle it. You know, you'd want to figure out that you don't want to play basketball because of your anxiety and depression after you've signed the contract. But I think that's a legitimate way to look at it. I don't agree with it, but I think that that's legitimate. What we wind up getting to, however, is I wouldn't handle it like that. I wouldn't be so anxious or depressed that I would have to leave. Or rather, the cousin of this argument, I am anxious. I am depressed. That doesn't stop me from going to work. In fact, if I had his talent, if I had his gifts, I would do things differently. I wouldn't succumb to these demons. Everybody's different. Everybody deals with things in different ways. But what I think this boils down to is a conversation about privilege. Being born with a certain amount, for in Larry Sanders' case, he was a very tall, athletic guy. Takes a lot of work to get into the league. You know, every tall person doesn't make it into the NBA. You know, it takes work and dedication, but he does have a very generous starting place. He is X high. You know, to quote Enzo Amore, you can't teach that. But what that cost is that people don't see, or rather, they discount your humanity because of your privilege. Now, before anybody goes and says, hey, this guy's an asshole, hey, this guy fucked up, if I had his talent and his gifts, and this is the only thing that I'm talking about, is people who would say, I wouldn't do it if I had his opportunity. I can't help but think you know, the United States has a very, very high average income. You know, not only amongst other Western civilized countries, but, I mean, if you look at against the population at large, the disparity is insane. I mean, there's a reason why charities say, hey, listen, for like 50 cents, you can drill a well in some African village that's going to feed, or it's going to you know, allow people to live for years and years. Our money is, in volume, way larger than what happens around the world. We are privileged to be American citizens. We are privileged to live in, for whatever your political beliefs are, not only in this country, but in this particular economic boom. What we consider to be recessions, you know, would be an absolute delight for many countries around the world. And it makes me wonder if everything that we did, if every way that we handled every element of our lives was scrutinized by people around the world, like, I wonder if there's like a market for covering random ass people for villages in, you know, the sub-Saharan African region. You'd be like, oh, look at Jerry. Have Jerry talk radio. Caller, go ahead. Hey, can you believe Jerry didn't get a job? He's been unemployed for 4 weeks. If I lived in America, I would have a job in 2 days. I'd get off my ass and I'd go do it. Okay, caller, thank you very, very much. Next. Yeah, I just want to comment about Jerry's dating habits. I really think he's selling himself short. You know, he really just needs to get a haircut. We'll be back with another 20 minutes of Jerry's haircut conversation after this. 105.9 The Jerry.
Yeah, I'm Jerry.
I just think that it would really benefit us to look at our privilege from all angles. And like, let's see if we can distance the idea of privilege from whatever topic. Because I think privilege tends to be a bit of a loaded word now. And a lot of that's because people talk about race and gender. Now, I think these are all very, very, very valid conversations to have. But we're going to try and keep them away from this particular one because I want to isolate this point. And try to isolate the term privilege from that. Because I think we can all agree that we're privileged to live either in America, those of us who do. I know we have some international listeners. But if you don't live in either a Western European country, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Korea, stuff like that, outside of those countries, you know, there's a lot of like real, you know, dirt under the fingernails poverty. I'm not saying that poverty doesn't exist here. It certainly does. But not like there. It doesn't. It just doesn't. We're privileged to be here. We're privileged to have these situations. And when you think about it like that, I think it's easier to look, because we don't want to be criticized. Jerry doesn't want to have 105.9 The Jerry with people in sub-Saharan Africa criticizing his every single move. Yeah, sometimes Jerry fucks up. He admits it. But, you know, cut him a little bit of fucking slack. You know, he's not like he's got the world figured out. He's just got a few advantages. And I think when you look at it like that, Larry Sanders just has a few advantages. Doesn't mean he didn't fuck up. Doesn't mean he wouldn't like to have things different if he could do it all over again. Just think about it. It's an interesting thing to think about. You know what else is interesting to think about? All the times you motherfuckers miss signals from people in middle school and high school. We're going to have a bonanza of embarrassment right after this.
Just went to eat and be left alone. But one day Bilbo was asked to go on a big adventure to the King's Low to help some dwarves get back their gold that was stolen by a dragon in the days of old. Bilbo back from his fall. Bilbo back from his fall.
pot with a goblin.
All right. If you would like to email us, it is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. That is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Make sure you put jury in the subject line. Normally we do this a little bit later in the program, but we are doing an extra large mailbag because, holy shit, you guys are fucking inept. I thought I was bad. I thought I was a world-class strikeout artist. Until I met this motley motherfucking crew, and I love each and every one of you for it. I want everybody to tweet me, Justin R. Young, on Twitter. That is Justin R. Young on Twitter. Or hit me up on Snapchat, whatever you want to do. But I want you to count your cringes from here until the end of the podcast. Whatever you're cringing at, go ahead and keep a count. Everybody, I'm going to give you guys a couple seconds. Go on, open your iPhone Notes app. Go grab a piece of loose leaf paper out of your Lisa Frank binder and get ready to start marking everything down. I want a cringe count along with your biggest cringe throughout the rest of the episode. We begin with William. William writes, I was 23 years old and a shift manager at a Burger King in a college town in Michigan. This is the beginning of an Elmore Leonard novel. I'm in love with this email at the beginning of it. I was 23 years old and a shift manager at a Burger King in a college town in Michigan. Love it. Which probably means it's either Ann Arbor or Lansing. For those of you who have yet to work in any food service, he continues, you know that 40% of the work is trying to fuck your coworkers. Another 40 is related to drugs and alcohol. The other 20 goes to the job. There was one girl named Robin that was my partner in crime. We were party pals only. I had a girlfriend at the time, and she had been with some dudes, but preferred women. One night in particular, I was drinking with her and her girlfriend at my place. My girl was at work. I didn't think of anything because I thought we were platonic. I was trying to help her drunk girlfriend out of a beanbag, and she kept tugging me down. I didn't put the pieces together until the next day when Robin asked me if I just wasn't into it or something. I looked at her confused and said, "Into what?" And then she told me that her girlfriend had asked her if they could have some fun with me, and Robin okayed it. I would have been cheating anyway, so it's probably best that it didn't happen. I can't help but wonder, though, what if? Now, this one isn't necessarily the worst mixed signals, which is why I put it first. But I just have to ask, William, unless you married the girl that you were working with at 23 years old in the college town in Michigan while you were a Burger King employee, and you had the option to get into a three-way with your friend, the party pal, and her obviously bi-curious girlfriend? I mean, listen. That's one that'll keep you up at night. If only because what the fuck else are you going to do, man? You're working at Burger King. There's only so much the world's going to expect of you. Should have knocked out that three-way. Josh writes, you want to talk about a missed signal? In middle school. Yes, middle school. I'm at a high school basketball game with this girl I had a crush on but never really talked to. She's getting playful and giving me kisses on the cheek and such. Toward the end of the game, she leans into my ear and whispers, I know this sounds crazy, but I want you to be my first. My response? First boyfriend? She then gets up and walks away, and within 2 weeks has moved on to another town. Of course, before she leaves town, I call and ask her what this whole first thing was, and she explains it to me. Oh, Josh! There's one thing to be fucking that inept to miss the signal. It's yet another thing to have them explain to you in explicit detail exactly the signal you missed. Although you're in middle school, right? I mean, come on. There's a little bit that you can be, no, you're right. No, fuck it. No, you're inept. Sorry, Josh. Chris writes, I frequently miss the signal, subtle or overt. When I was a sophomore in college, 1985.
Marty, we have to go back and miss a signal in college.
I went to a movie with my roommate, he continues. This theater had a pizza place and a bar inside as well.
We were standing in the bar area. It was winter, and I had dropped my scarf on the floor. I felt a hand on my arm and turned to see a striking brunette about my age holding the scarf. She said, "You dropped this." She put the scarf around my neck while still holding onto the ends and noticeably pulling herself while saying, "We can't have you getting cold, can we? Any closer and we would have been kissing." I smiled and said thank you before proceeding down into the theater with my drink. After my roommate and I got home, my roommate said to me, "Why the hell didn't you do anything back there? I think that girl would have fucked you in the lobby." I went back to the theater the next 5 Fridays with hopes of seeing her again, but no luck. I managed to maintain that level of obliviousness for years to come. When I first met my wife, she practically threw herself at me. My life was so busy and complicated, I didn't get it at all. It took 6 months of randomly running into her and somebody else pointing it out before I got the message. Yeah. You know, that's... I'm going to go ahead and give that... I'm going to give that 3 out of 10 douche pimples. Because it's a girl obviously being very forward. But it's not as bad as some of these other ones. I mean, it was just a girl hitting on you that you didn't really pick up on. So, I mean, not that bad. Not that bad. Tyler writes, "To get to the point, I like this girl. She was a close friend. It clouded my judgment all through high school. Constantly trying to impress her, but never brave enough to come out and tell her. I spent so much mental and physical energy on this hopeless endeavor that I was unable or unwilling to see the myriad of people who actually did have interest in me." Quick pet peeve. It's myriad. You are unwilling to see myriad people who actually have interest in you. It's not like a big... I'm not the grammar police. Right? It's just one thing. Myriad. They say the myriad of? No, just myriad. Getting back to the email. "The most egregious of these moments came in the early morning before the first bell. In my high school, everyone gets to meet up in the cafeteria in their little cliques and talked for a bit before heading to first period. One day, a girl who I had gone to school with since sixth grade comes over to my table and says, hello. We'll call her E. Average height, slim, long dark hair, sleepy, smoky eyes. The kind of mysterious and dark, artsy kind of chick." Oh, I think I got half a boner reading that. Ooh, poppy. "She's friends with the girl I eventually take to prom and end up marrying, but I'll get to that in a second. So this beautiful girl walks me up and says, hello." We got to that, right? "My friends are all still chatting amongst themselves at this circular table. Hey, E, I say. Mind if I sit with you? She says. No, not at all. Without skipping a beat, she's not sitting with me so much as on me. She's in my lap. Now, I've said maybe 7 or 8 words to this girl over the last 4 years, and now she's got her badonkadonk resting on my genitals in front of all my friends who have stopped talking entirely. She kicks the conversation back up and starts them all from talking about something. I honestly can't remember what. What I do remember is about that time, while everyone was talking and distracted, she leans back and says, I wish I could fuck you right now. Before I can say anything, no shit, it's the first bell. I gotta get to class, is all I can say. She smiles and walks off. And that was pretty much the last time we spoke until senior year. I was convinced that this had to be a prank and probably somebody paid her or dared her to do it. Maybe she was on drugs. Maybe because people, real people, human beings, don't just do that. That's what I told myself, and nothing happened. Flash forward. I was talking to my wife years later and her friend E comes up. I tell her the story in a joking way and I ask her if she knew who put her up to it. My wife tells me no. They actually used to talk about that quite a bit, and they'd actually joked about who would quote-unquote win and end up with me. Holy shit. Looking back, there were a lot of those missed signals that I allowed my self-esteem issues to devour before they could be acted upon. If I could go back and give myself advice, it would be to let other people see the side of you that they want to see instead of trying to control the narrative. There's plenty of fun to be had by trusting what others see in you. What that chick saw in you was a surefire fuck. And what'd you do?
Gotta go, Phil. Ding.
That was good. I think that's our champion so far, but we got some other contenders. by the way, the chat room right now is killing the game. You guys are the best. You guys are so amazing. Everybody who's into this, if you are not watching live, well, hell, you need to. Come on over to DiamondClub.tv every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern. We go back to the emails. Scale writes, in high school, I was a big-time nerd, debate team, chess club. You get the idea. Somehow, and I don't know how, I end up behind the school football oval with two girls. One of them was a girl I played chess with. We'll call her Chess Girl. Her friend, who had no interest in any club activities, we'll call Boring Girl. Chess Girl was gorgeous, in a young Audrey Hepburn kind of way. Boring Girl was more homely. Poor fucking Boring Girl. But since we were in high school, she was an early bloomer. She had other assets to rely on in the looks department. Translation, she had nice tits. Just say she has nice tits. Anyway, like I said, I was and still am a big-time nerd, so I didn't have many friends in school, let alone girlfriends. When it came time for teenage sexual shenanigans, I had literally zero experience to fall back on. So, behind the football oval, we talk shit for a while, and then out of the blue, Chess Girl leans in for the kiss. I was a virgin at that stage, but it wasn't my first kiss, so I knew what to do. And it was good. It was great. Actually, it was fucking fantastic. But while we were sucking each other's faces, Boring Girl was tugging at my sleeve, saying something, and I was ignoring her. This went on for a while, and it seemed like she really wanted my attention for something, so I turned her and with drool on my chin, said something along the lines of, "Not now, kinda busy here." And that was where I blew it. Because it turned out, unbeknownst to me, that Chess Girl and Boring Girl were far more interested in each other, that they had pulled me down behind the football oval thinking I'd be an easy mark for God knows what, and that being a nerd without many friends, I wouldn't have anyone to tell about it. But none of that happened because Boring Girl lost interest, and when that happened, so did Chess Girl. I guess they must have found something else. They found someone else for their session of God knows what. It's not God knows what. God knows that they both would have fucked you. My first time could have been with two bi-curious, experimental teenage girls, but I blew it and didn't lose my virginity for another 2 years. That's our new champion. Could have started your sexual career off with a three-way behind the football oval, which is only a football oval because he's writing from Australia. Australia. Sweet, sweet Australia. Connor writes, 8th grade, this cute blonde and I have a crush on each other, so we text, because that had recently become a thing that people do. Dating yourself, Connor. One day, she asks me what people think of her at school.
What do you mean?
I ask. Well, do people think I'm like a goody two-shoes?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Well, I'm really not. I do a lot more than you'd think.
Well, that's unfortunate. It sounds like you have a perception issue. Maybe cursing more would help.
As of today, as a senior in high school, she sits in front of me in AP Lit. Oh, wait, hold on. Connor's in high school now. They're only starting to text because they... Oh, good God, Connor! Connor, she's still there! Connor! Good God, Connor! Man, this went from fucking, like, Tales of Yonder to fucking Dispatches from the Front Lines! Fuck, Connor. God damn it. Listen, Connor, huddle up. Huddle up, Connor. Number one, this isn't, I don't know where you at. I don't know if you got any girlfriend. If you're still single and she's still single, this can still be a thing. This is a funny story now. You're out. You're having a good time. You got some mutual friends. You separate the two of you. You know what I think? Do you remember when? This can still be salvaged. Connor's going to email back and be like, no, I'm sorry. I'm still in high school, but I'm married with 4 kids. Fucking, just, come on. Connor, get it together. Now I feel invested in you, Connor. I want Connor to... Is it creepy if I ask Connor to tell me if he's gotten laid since? If I'm asking high school boys to tell me about their sexual history? Yeah, that's creepy. Connor, don't do that. For God's sakes. Email Ashley. I'll give you her email address, and that way it's less creepy. Epic Murdoch's boyfriend. All right, so Epic Murdoch in the chat room wrote me this, and I'm going to... it's her boyfriend's story. So I'll go ahead and just read this. I was 14 and in high school, and I just recently started dating. My first real, hey, we're boyfriend and girlfriend, girlfriend. It was an exciting point in life. But that didn't make me any less of an idiot. Now, I want to kind of state that I had gone to grade and middle school at a Catholic school up in New Jersey. So I'd gotten the just the barest teachings in the birds and the bees and sexy innuendo. So one day, my girlfriend invited me over her place to study. I'm sure you've already gotten ahead of me, so I'll cut to it. While we were actually studying, her father, the only adult in the house, pops his head into the room to inform us that he's going out for a bit and to behave. Hey, you two, behave. In that tone of voice of a man who knows! He takes off. My girlfriend starts telling me about her favorite underwear and goes about trying it on in front of me. And what does my ignorant ass do? Talk to her about some dumb ass Warcraft 3 fanfic I'd been writing. I didn't lose my virginity that day. Oh. Warcraft 3 fan fiction. Oh. Ah, no! No! Not Warcraft 3 fan fiction! Of all the fan fictions, it's even worse! Oh, because it's a computer game. It's not even a movie that she's seen or a book that she's read. It's Warcraft 3 fan fiction. No one plays Warcraft 3 for the stories. They play it for the fucking strategy. Oh, good fucking God, man. No. No. I feel like I don't care how many people you fucked, you should have 5 taken off the record. That is a penalty of 5 fucks that you should pay. Oh, good God. But seriously, how was the Warcraft 3 fan fiction? Just kind of curious. Brad writes, early sophomore year of college. It's been over a year since high school graduation, and I stayed local. Get involved in the local community theater and work on a show with a girl named Katrina from my high school class who I hadn't seen since graduation. She'd always been on the outer part of my social circle, had a lot of mutual friends, but didn't really interact all that often. Katrina was smart, funny, talented, super cute, and all the guys I knew wanted her at one time or another over the years. So, back to the stage show. Because we knew each other, we started talking backstage. I assumed it was purely platonic, but she was paying much more attention to me than ever before. The show ends its run, and all the cast and crew go to the cast party, and afterward, a few of us end up hanging out in the middle of the night on a pool deck at the director's house. Suddenly, someone decides we should go skinny dipping because, obviously, none of us had planned this and had no suits. So, all the more traditional theater people with no inhibitions strip down and jump right in. This leaves me, extremely shy and self-conscious, and Katrina, who was always the good girl type, as well as her friend, all standing on the deck terrified of what to do. So I strip down to my boxer briefs and quickly get in, and the two girls follow suit in their undergarments. A little while later, one of the women jokingly says to Katrina that she should get out of her remaining clothes because it's uncomfortable in the water. She says, I will if Brad does, thinking she's safe because I won't do it. But in already in the water, so totally out of my own personal character, I pull off my boxer briefs faster than I ever have in my life. Shortly thereafter, everybody is fully nude and hanging out in the pool in the dark. Throughout the night, multiple times, she floated by and grazed against me, even grabbing my ass once. I, of course, Thought nothing of it at the time. All night, too, there was a running joke about how I wasn't able to see anybody naked because I'd taken off my glasses. When I get out and put my glasses on, I say, "Hey, now I can see." Katrina stands right in front of me and flashes me. It wasn't until about a month later that my brain finally realized the signal she had been sending. What the fuck? The next time I saw her, I was working another show shortly later, so I decided to lay on my game as hard as possible. She seemed quite unresponsive this time, and I soon found out she had a new boyfriend. Brad. 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 Trey writes, flashback to 2000, I was a dumpy sophomore in high school. Dude, obviously since I'm listening to your podcast, all right, come on, not everybody was a dumpy dude in high school who listens to this podcast. Some of them, I'm sure, were dumpy chicks. Cute girl, pretty, out of my league, seems to be hitting on me, I see in retrospect, making a point to sit next to me, very chatty. I convince myself she's not into me, and I don't want to embarrass myself. Soon she gives me a picture of herself with her phone number on the back. I suck it up and call her, and while I'm driving around one day, we chat briefly, and she asks if I masturbate. Yeah, sometimes, is all I can get out. She asks next what I think about when I do. I come up with some excuse that I can't talk and I hang up real smooth. Thanks, Trey. Thomas writes, I was texting a friend who I have known since high school while riding in the car on the way to hang out with some people from work. She and I were talking about personal finances and the 2012 end of the world stuff. I made a joke that if the world was about to end, I'd be spending my last remaining hours getting laid. Yeah, that's been my last remaining hours getting laid. Which is like the worst. Oh, God. Is there anything more unsexy than somebody saying that? Yeah, I don't know. I'd be out here trying to get laid. She told me that sounded like a good plan and that she would probably choose to fuck me if she could have one guy before the world ended. Then she asked if I would choose... if I would choose her as being as oblivious as I am, I would pick, okay, who I would choose. Sorry. Me being oblivious as I am, I say I would pick the nearest slut. This is what he writes. The nearest slut. Because I didn't exactly have time to be picky. A couple minutes later, she sent me a text and said, quote, I would tie you down and fuck you until you came like a volcano. At that point, I'm still unsure if she's being serious. Fuck you! No! 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 Really? Really? Oh, my good God, man. Oh, Jesus, Herbert fucking Hoover. Jesus fucked Herbert Hoover in a film that they made together. That's what is happening because you're so fucking dense. Oh, Jesus just came on Herbert Hoover's back. Thanks, Jesus, Herbert Hoover said back to Jesus, who just fucked him in the ass and came on his back on film. That's what's happening because of you. Oh, all right, hold on. Recomposing. At that point, I'm still unsure if she's being serious or fucking with me. And feeling a bit awkward about all of this, I respond only with LOL. Next comes a 15-minute pause, followed by... No, what happened in the 15 minutes is Jesus fucked Herbert Hoover and came on his back on tape. Next comes a 15-minute pause, followed by her saying that she would do anything I wanted, such as making a sex tape or having a threesome with another girl. It is about this time I start to realize that she might actually be into me. It's also about that time that I get so wrapped up in hanging out with my friends that I forget all about her. I check my phone at the end of the night only to find out that I had missed a text that she had sent me, which spelled it all out. Can you just come to my apartment and fuck me? This is her negotiation. She tried to be subtle. She says, hey, I would like to fuck you if it were the end of the world. Which, since the end of the world is unlikely to happen, means she'd just like to fuck you. Then she says, I'm good at fucking. All right, sweeten the pot. You know, just let her know in case you weren't aware. She's good at fucking. She can make you come like a volcano. Ain't got to be a volcanologist to tell you that that's a good kind of coming. And she's like, oh, by the way, I am value added. We'll give you the fuck sesh. We'll make it good. And we'll give you all the free add-ons. Make a sex tape. Fuck another girl. This deal can't get any sweeter. How about this? What can I say to get you in this pussy right now? Come on over to the apartment and get it on. Of course he didn't. He finishes. She and I haven't really talked that much since that night, and I don't lose out on much since she had gotten a little too heavy for my taste in high school, although I wouldn't still be a virgin. Come on! Fuck you! Oh, Thomas! Tom? Stop it. Seriously. Come on. Thomas? Tom? I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Ken writes, do you think I could temporarily... Sorry. This is the only... Holy crap. Okay, wait a minute. Let me just make sure that I left a few non-miss signals things in here. Okay. Here we go. David writes, my own miss signals. That signals, plural, started with the cliche in high school. I was so wrapped up in his own miserable high school existence that he had no idea that unlike all of his other male friends, he had a knack for attracting more than a few females. I thought nothing of it. As it turns out, thanks to Facebook and a few chance encounters in the Detroit suburb where I matriculated since graduating, it was laid upon me that I could have had my choice of not one, not two, but four of my female friends. It was the nicest, most... I was the nicest, most charming, easiest guy to get along with. Some told me even to this day. But of course, I was such a mess of angst and confusion, I never knew. I had unconsciously friend-zoned myself multiple times. Now, this isn't a great miss signal story, but this is a cautionary tale. If you are a good guy, and not just a character of a good guy, that says, but I'm a good guy online while you're calling women sluts or saying that they've gotten heavy since high school, then it is highly likely that somebody wants to fuck you. Highly. Highly likely. If you're in high school, good guy, calm, honest, decent, I don't give a fuck what you look like. It is likely that someone wants to fuck you. Now, I'm not saying you need to. I'm not even saying you should. I'm saying it's available to you. And if you don't take advantage of it, then just know that you're not. Because even knowing that will give you an element of self-confidence. Don't just go walking around saying, but I want to fuck Susie. Susie says you're just friends. And now all of a sudden you're all angry about it and you feel that life isn't fair. Uh-uh. Life is fair. You have a fuck coupon. You're choosing to rip it up. And that's what fucking David here figured out. Trey writes, hey, dude, love the show. My biggest neon flashing sign moment was when I was 15 and visiting a cousin who had a friend across the road that we used to hang out with. One night, we're over there listening to music. She puts on Moose T's Horny and was singing, dancing around. Took my hand and took me to her bedroom. I herpaderped my way through the conversation, no idea what was going on. Sat on the floor while she lay on the bed holding my hand. My cousin came in, got glared at, and left. I sat there for 5 to 10 minutes, oblivious that this chick wanted me to bang her. I walked out of the room, went back to my cousin's house, and chilled out. My cousin even asked if anything happened, and when I said no, she replied, what the hell? Were you listening to the music she was playing? Come on. Jason writes, the first time I was a freshman in college, this attractive girl, let's call her T, was in my trig class. Cute, flirty, and a few weeks into the class, proud to show off her new tongue ring. Halfway through the class, she invited me to her dorm room to study, which was feasible since my grades were somewhat stronger. She proceeds to kick out her roommate once I got there, and at one point drops her pants to show off her Batman underoos. Do I pick up the hint? No! Instead, I was oblivious, helped her finish her homework, and went back to my dorm room. He continues, by the way. Jason writes, the second time was in my senior year in college. A girl in most of my business classes, let's call her M, pretty and comfortable enough that one day on the bus, she tells me, N-word, you crazy. Wait, I forgot, you're not black. I'm assuming that M is black, by the way, in this story, that she's just not tossing the N-word out on the bus. One day, we're closing in on an auditing final. She came to my place to study, sitting on the floor in a skirt, clearly flashing her turquoise panties at me. I made no moves. Jason, you're a fool. All right. We only have a few non-Miss Signal stories. Let's go ahead and knock those out here while we are going through everything. Ken writes, well, here, let's go ahead and differentiate. Number one, thank you to everybody who wrote the Miss Signal stories. And what I want now I want to hear from the ladies. I want to hear your, I fucking could not build a billboard big enough for this dude. I was handing out pamphlets with little maps on the back tracing their way to my fucking pussy. And this dude could not figure it out for the life of him. Ignorant ass motherfuckers. Give me your, I tried to build a fucking village, or I tried to plow a fucking a pathway to my loins, and I was rejected stories from the ladies. JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com. Let's go ahead and get to our regular mail sounds. Ken writes, do you think that you could temporarily reconcile with your ghost dad in Puerto Rico so we can hook me up with one of Google's Project Aura modular phones that's going to be tested there? No, Ken. But remember, persistence is the key. Sam writes, Justin, what are your thoughts on the phrase, blood is thicker than water? I personally feel it's utter horseshit. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to skip this email. Basically, I've read it a couple times. He makes the point that his dad is kind of an asshole. And he doesn't like smoking, so he told his dad he doesn't want to be around him when he smokes. So his dad starts vaping, and he's like, no, I don't know what the fuck is in this vape shit. I don't want that around me either. And his dad's like, it ain't smoking. And it's like blowing vape right in his face. Here's my thought. This isn't about your dad. Or sorry, rather, it's not about the smoking. It is about your dad. It's about you being angry at him for being a shitty father. And so what your dad, and he also says that he tells his girlfriend these stories, and his girlfriend's like, what the fuck? Who gives a shit? So he vapes fucking like, you know, maybe it's harmful, but don't be that big of an asshole about it. Everyone's right. Your dad, in his own frame of reference, is right to say that it's not the same thing as smoking. He honored your non-smoking thing, but he's not honoring this. Your girlfriend's right to not understand why it's a big thing. It is a big thing, and you are right to think that it's kind of fucked up, because again, this is a continuation of all your issues you've had with him in the past. So what you really need to do is air some shit out with your dad. A lot of this will seem a lot different once you air some shit out with your dad. Now, maybe that does nothing, but at that point, you have tried to air some shit out, he has not been responsive, and now you can deal with him in a different way. But you need to get that shit off your chest for you. And finally, Kyle writes, last week, by the way, this is a huge thing, everybody, go ahead and if you're into this, here, let me just read the email. Last week, my cousin was diagnosed with breast cancer exactly 8 years after her mother had passed away from the same disease. She has made it through many times in her life, but now is the time that she needs help the most. Please visit GoFundMe.com/REEDER, Cancer Fund. That is GoFundMe.com/Reader. Cancer Fund, but readers in REEDER, Cancer Fund, and donate toward her surgery or recovery or share her story. So listen, you got a few ducats, go ahead and check it out. GoFundMe/Reader Cancer Fund, or just post it up if you find the story compelling and you got a little room in your heart. Dirty Middle School Corner. Here we go. Connor writes, there once was a genie with a 12-foot weenie, and he went to the lady next door. She thought it was a snake and hit it with a rake, and now it's only 3'4". This is the Connor who is still in high school who read the other email. So, Connor, you redeemed yourself a little bit with this here dirty shanty. If you want to send me dirty middle school corner songs, then go ahead and do that, as well as anything at justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. You can find this podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or some other shit. Email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com, Twitter and Instagram at justinryoung, hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com, and of course, the Patreon! We had a Patreon payday this week, so I know a lot of people adjusted their contributions But we have 259 patrons. It is so amazing to watch this fucking continue to grow. This community is so special to me. Thank you guys so much. Also, I wrote a little survey to everybody. I sent out celebrity jizz impressions. If you are a new patron and you want it, go ahead and email me. I'll send you the link to it. But if you listen to this and you have literally dissolved into a pile of dust, because your shame has hit critical mass, and you think no world in which this exists could really be worth living, well, friends, in those moments of quiet contemplation, please remember that your old pal, Justin Robert Young, is echoing in your recesses of your mind, screaming, please don't die! Jerry Moore is next. We'll see you guys in a little bit.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.